Hello, everyone, and welcome back to one of our lovely podcast productions. In this case, we are Blizzard Watch, and we are going to be playing Daggerheart. I'm actually not running the game. I'm Joe Perez. I'm just going to be monkeying around here. Matt's not running the game either, but he's also here.
And I'm instead, also not monkeying, I'm yakking.
But instead,
oh dear,
we have our new friend. You may have seen him around the site, and if you've been in the WoW community for a while, you've probably recognized him elsewhere. And he's also on our D&D and Pathfinder, our Pathfinder game. Phil. Phil's going to be running the show, so why don't you tell everybody who you are?
I am. Hi, I'm Phil. I've been I was strong-armed into running this by Liz, by which I mean, Lord, I'm excited to run this. This is an open beta of the Daggerheart system from the good people behind Critical Role, and I just need to say this at the top of the show. This is based on the Daggerheart open beta playtest, so if you are listening to this months from now, once the game is finally out, some things might be different. And with that out of the way, I'll be DMing this for our session zero and then our actual one shot afterwards, but why don't we go ahead and get the rest of the players in, starting with Anne.
I'm gonna break everything, it's beta. Anyway, hi, I'm Anne Stickney. I'm here to break everything because it's beta and I have a character, but it's session zero. We'll talk about that part later. Hi.
And next up, how about Liz?
Hello, I am Liz Harper, and I don't know what I'm playing because I've rolled like four or five characters and I like them all, and I don't know. Someone's going to have to help me. Hopefully it'll be fun, though.
It's so easy to roll characters. It's almost a problem. You can whip one out and go, this is cool. Let me start over. And last but certainly not least, Nick.
Hi, I'm Nick, and I don't know what I'm going to play. I have ideas of what I'm going to play, and I hope to hammer it out by the end of the session.
That's the whole idea. So, this is a session zero, and if people haven't had a session zero in their game, one cool thing about Daggerheart up front is it's a session zero is designed to set our expectations and also help create characters for people who don't have anything nailed down yet. We've got people all over the place from Joe and Matt clearly have something in mind. Liz has way too many things in mind. And I think Anne has a character completely fleshed out.
Mostly.
Normally in these, we would be talking about things like some world building and safety mechanics. And obviously, we're going to skip around some parts of these because, for example, it's just a one shot. I don't think we're going to get too deep on world building unless we decide to keep running this game later and then we'll circle back for it. But I thought it might be nice for people to see how this is set up to run in Daggerheart, because this might be the first time I've ever seen an actual like framework for running an entire session zero in a game, right down to here's how much time you should probably spend on this.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's interesting how they've designed this game.
The only thing I've looked at is like the character builder, and the character builder is like, I mean, I thought D&D Beyond was like dangerous for just dinking around and making random characters. And no, this is like 10 times worse.
Oh no, this is, especially since there aren't that many steps and they're not that complicated. And use your imagination. Hours so
dinking around, yeah.
Yeah, creating a character is actually like several steps into a session zero, because the idea first is everyone gets on the ground floor of what kind of game they actually want to play. And then creating a character is, a ways into it. We've got through introductions. We've talked about what a session zero is. There's a thing we'll touch on here in a minute about what they call CATS is the system. Content, aim, tone, and I don't remember the S.
Stuff.
Yeah, stuff. You take a little break and you normally have about an hour for world building. Like I said, we're going to skip over that today. And then the last big chunk of a session zero is character creation. And we'll just kind of have everybody create their characters together, because another thing that Daggerheart has pulled in from more narrative focused games is there's a section right at the end where you guys are going to ask questions of each other. Mm-hmm. And it really helps kind of tie your characters together and determine how you know each other better than we all sat down at the same table in a bar and decided to take the same quest.
It could happen.
But for people who want things a little less contrived, it's here. So I'm going to, does anybody have anything they want to say before we just dive into it?
I apologize for jumping the gun and making like a whole character. I love her name, though. I love her name, and I'm just obsessed. So
I feel like if you have to apologize for that, Liz and I have to like start writing books of apologies.
Yeah, like today was the first, you know, Matt's been sending links for his character sheets in Discord, and today was the first I actually thought to click through to the details tab on all of them.
He's got everything.
Wow, yeah. So
I like to give people hooks.
Dude, Rossi is a writer. Haven't you heard?
Matt is a writer, a fantastic one, and I think a GM's best friend at this point.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So we'll start at the top. The S in cats, by the way, is subject matter, which goes back to what we mentioned about safety tools at the very beginning. But we'll start
it. It also files under stuff.
It does. Mm. Stuff you don't want to see is pretty much it. I'll start at the top. So the concept for this is actually pretty well set because of what we're doing this. I'm anticipating it's just playing a one shot of this. Maybe you want to keep going, but has anybody else looked at the playtest adventure included in the packet?
No.
I deliberately haven't looked at the adventure.
Perfect.
Same.
All right. Well, then I will leave that a surprise for everybody. Just suffice it to say, it is kind of a generic, straightforward, high fantasy style adventure in which you're going to be hired to do a task. That's all you really need to know.
Did we follow that?
Yeah, I'll save the rest of it until we get into it. You know, we're not getting into like science fantasy or dark, gritty, tracking your resources type fantasy or anything like that. So. Any objections? Anybody really here to play Zweihander and showed up for the wrong games?
Man, I tried running that game.
Woof. My group was immediately turned off the idea of completely random character creation.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as trying to play something like Fatal, but it wasn't great.
No. We don't talk about Fatal.
Fatal has inherent issues. Zweihander plays a specific kind of game that your group has to be on, but I don't think that'll be an issue here. And with that, we've also kind of covered our aim. We're looking to do a one-shot to help participate in the playtest, send feedback to the good folks at Darrington Press to help shape this game, and also provide a podcast for the good folks at Blizzard Watch and have some fun along the way. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And break it!
Yeah, it's a beta. I'm sure
it'll be a beta.
Yeah, I'm not going into this with the idea of having to try to break it. I'm sure I will do something wrong and mess it up real good. Just being me. So
to be fair, that will probably happen for everybody because we're all going to be learning these rules as we go along. I have been reading a lot of them, but there's a bit to go here on here. It's different. Go ahead, Liz.
It's a playtest document that's nearly 400 pages long, and that's not even including the quick start adventure.
Yeah, that's none of the stuff like the cards or the quick start or the character sheets. Mm-hmm. They have an entire draft of the rules here. I'll also insert here, if you have not actually seen this for yourself and you're listening and you're like, well, how do I get this 377 page draft game? You can go to daggerheart.com and put your email address there to download a zip file containing everything you need to play the game, including the playtest, the rules, the character sheets, and all the cards for you to print out, because this game is based on a lot of character abilities being on cards, which is kind of cool. All right, so... We'll move on to the T in cats, which is tone. I'm going to put a list of adjectives into our Discord chat here, and I'll read them out loud for the people at home. The idea is that we have a list of just generic tone words here for a campaign, and the idea is to talk about which ones we are definitely interested in or definitely not interested. The list for the people listening is lighthearted, adventurous, gritty, funny, scary, whimsical, intimate, dramatic, heart-pounding, romantic, goofy, and intense. And I think we'll just kind of go around and we can have a discussion about what people are and aren't interested in seeing on the list. I think I've said up front, I'm really not interested in gritty for my part, and I'm not super wild about goofy, but I'm interested to hear what the rest of you have to say.
You actually nailed exactly what I was going to say. The world is getting gritty enough, and you can go...
I also 100%
goofy, goofy can be fun, but you can also go too goofy. There's nice middle ground there.
I was gonna say you're probably going to get a little goofy out of me, but that's just because I'm playing a fairy.
There's goofy and there's funny. I think fairies have a lot of room to be funny and to be like funny. Yeah. Whimsical and goofy are all in here, and I think there's a difference between those. And I think we're all kind of
whimsical. Whimsical, lighthearted. That's the kind of funny that I... Oh, and funny is on there. Okay, yeah. So gritty, I'm not really into. Scary can actually be kind of fun at times, but I don't know if we really want to go there this time around. And, yeah.
I mean, we don't have to cross things out or bold them automatically. Like, if it's like, people are okay with it, but nobody's, like, super interested in it right now, like, you can leave it on there as a thing down the road, but, like, crossing it...
I will say I am mostly interested in the lighthearted adventure side of things. That's just like fun and whimsical and just let's have a good time.
Yeah, I can tell you that I'm definitely not interested in like romantic as the adjective or what we're working with here. Like, I don't know. It's not the mindset that I'm into for like a group thing like this.
Same.
Yeah, I don't do the romantic stuff. Thanks.
Yeah, I think I'm on board with funny moments, but you know, not overly jumping into the goof a hook, and down for the lighthearted adventure.
Okay, so it sounds like we're all kind of on board with lighthearted at least, and definitely adventurous. Not so much gritty or goofy, and I'm okay with tossing romantic out too, honestly.
I mean, it really depends on what you mean by romantic as well.
But I mean, it also depends on what you mean by goofy. There's a lot of wiggle room here.
For me, I mean, gritty is something I don't mind occasionally, like a little bit of it to provide contrast. But I don't want to play a game where we're constantly like, you know, narrating in our heads, it was another night where everybody I knew was dead. Like that's not what I'm going for.
While a storm strikes in the background because it never stops.
Struck a groom. I had to stop wearing my lightning rod pants. But like and likewise romantic. I'm not looking to be like you know turning to Joe and going you know I've always loved you. But I not that I haven't. I have always loved Joe. But regardless, I'm not looking to like date anybody on the you know through my character. But I don't mind a little bit of you know. The vistas are magnificent and God, what a wonderful life we live sort of romanticism. That's fine.
I would file that under intimate.
Well, I don't necessarily want to be intimate either. I think when it comes to a lot of it, what I'm looking at is
intimate. That's what I want to know.
That's a problem. I think for me, the way that intense is in there, intense is something I like as long as it isn't like jumping up and down on my head. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how else to explain it. Like, I like a game where stuff is cool and we're all here, happy to be here.
that's what I'm looking for. So
yeah,
the heart pounding one reminds me of Mystery Science Theater 3000, Space Mutiny. Now, active seniors lifestyle says it'll make your heart race, but maybe that's not such a good thing. That's what I think when I see heart pounding. Like, it's just, I don't want my heart to pound too much. You know, but again, you know, I think we're all on the same thing. I was waiting to say this, and then it all kind of came out like blarg. So
yeah, that's good. And like these things that like they're, so I guess the difference is like you can say, I don't want this to be a central tone of the campaign. Like, I think we're all pretty much on board with, I don't want romantic relationships being a central portion of the game.
Yeah, but exactly.
Like two other levels. There's like, there's central part of the campaign. There's, is it okay if it comes up? Or there's, I don't want to see this.
I don't think any of these are a hard pass for me, except maybe like, I would say gritty it is the closest to a hard pass for me, just because I know that the way it's too easy to become parody, and it's too easy to make people uncomfortable. So
that's fair. Nick, Joe, you guys have been quiet. Anything else you want to add to this?
Nope. I'm pretty open for whatever. Nothing's really like a hard pass for me. If it, like, as far as like, I never want to see this. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm good. I think for me, the other thing too is just the grit. Like, I'm okay with like short, intense moments, but like a continuous slog where we're getting crushed is not it.
Yeah, I get it. That doesn't seem fun for anybody. And by not centering it, we're saying, yeah, this is something that could come up, but it's not going to be like the core of our campaign. If we were playing this for months, it's not going to be like, you know, we're not going to have like a protracted siege where everybody's like constantly under threat and fighting disorder. Like that doesn't even sound fun while I'm saying it out loud. So like, I think we're all on board. So I think we'll move on to the next section, which is the S in cats stuff. By which I mean subject matter. The idea here is, so Daggerheart promotes up front several safety tools, which like a lot of indie RPGs these days, and even you'll find videos on incorporating them into D&D. Things to just make sure that players are comfortable at the table, that they're not, you know, presented with uncomfortable content that they just have to kind of sit and squirm through, or that if you have players who are from marginalized communities, that they, you know, don't, that they can feel comfortable playing at your table. I don't think that that's necessarily a problem at this group, but I do want to put up front the that two of the tools that I would consider in play are the X card and Lands and Veils, and we can use them privately. So if nobody feels comfortable speaking up about it, I still know about it. I'll quickly go over them just in case listeners haven't heard of them. The X card is basically, if we were playing at a physical table, this would be a card with an X on it. And if something was happening in game that you were uncomfortable with, and no one's going to ask you to explain, hey, why don't you like this? You just want to say, hey, let's move on from this. You either hold the card up or you tap on, you basically exit out of what's happening. And if this is just something that you're not comfortable with, then we just move right past it. Or if it's something that we can't move past, we can retcon it so this thing didn't happen. It's not like, oh, I don't like what happened to my character because I died. No, it's like something happened to my character and I am intensely not okay with what happened on a personal level. Then this helps people, you know, that the content at the table is what they want. The more specific version of that is Lines and Veils, which the way to think of it is lines are, this is a list of things. Lines are hard lines, things you absolutely do not want to see in the game at all. Like, you don't even want them to be an element. They're not going to be alluded to. They're not happening in the background. So like the example they use in the book is this, Joe says they don't want transphobia, homophobia, or any bigotry against queer people in the game. Those are considered lines that GM won't. They won't be in the game. They won't be alluded to. Like, it won't even be like a parallel. It's just gone, which is, it's just something you don't want to deal with at the table. The lighter weight version, that is a veil, which is, you could think of it as, when this comes up, we don't focus on it. We don't keep it on screen. We draw a veil over it. An example here, the one they use in the book again, is real world politics. Like, there might be parallels with real world politics, but it won't be the spotlight of what's going on, and the game's table talk will avoid making comparisons to things that are happening right now. Another one I've seen since we mentioned the one of the tone words was intimate, is intimate situations. Maybe it's like, I am not interested in Joe attempting to seduce me with his monkey man, even though I'm playing an NPC he's really into. So we're just going to draw a veil over anything personal, like that kind of thing. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this here, but if anybody has a line or a veil and they would like to let me know, please do. My DMs are open.
I mean, I would at least say that the thing you used as your example is not a bad one to put into the game, and I'd throw racism in there too.
Mm. Okay, I agree. I agree that they're not things we necessarily want to see in games, and I also don't know that I feel comfortable portraying them in a thoughtful manner, being a cishet white man. So
yeah,
I'm okay with drawing a line on that kind of thing in the game. Anybody else have any other additional comments?
Nope.
Cool. All right, so that was Cats, and this is where we would get into world building, but we're going to skip it. Sorry. Does anybody need a little break before we jump into character creation?
No, I think I'm good. I think I would be a hypocrite if I said I did.
If you need a break, man, it's just to have everybody catch up to you while you're gone.
Okay, I can make another character while I work.
Me too. We come back, you've got like a half dozen.
I definitely don't have the Demiplane character creator open in another tab making a character. That's okay. So the next step of session zero is creating our characters, which there is a 9-step process in the character creation thing. It sounds like we're all over the board. So I'm just going to go down the alphabetical order and see where people are in the process. Anne, you want to go first?
Okay. How far I am in the process. There was a couple of things that were like unnamed experiences, and I didn't know what those were, so I didn't do anything with that. And also, oh, the connections questions. Obviously, I didn't fill those out, but I filled out everything else. So my character is a Wanderborn fairy bard. Her name is Thistledown Catterwall, because that's a mouthful, but she's very tiny. And I picked out all of my stuff for her already. I'm pretty far along.
That is pretty cool. So I'll just jump in here to explain a couple things about Daggerheart. So the experiences... So in D&D, when you make your character, remember you pick your big list of skills, like your diplomacy and your diplomacy, even a skill. And
yeah.
No, persuasion, intimidation, nature, all that jazz. In Daggerheart, this is where you get your experiences. Your experiences are kind of the way they describe it is a word or phrase to encapsulate a specific set of skills your character might have because of the exciting life they've lived. Like, even though you guys are level one, Daggerheart assumes that you guys are already adventurers who've gone out in the world and done things, and you're competent. And so you start at, like, character creation with 2 experiences. One of them is a +2, one of them is a +1, and I think certain other classes can add more. Like, I think characters who are lower born, which means they're from a society that
values both of mine knowledge. Say +1.
I think in the character creator you can choose one to add one to.
Yeah, you choose.
Yeah,
okay. It gives you essentially it air quotes 3 in the character creator, but you're essentially it's to give 1 +2 and 1 goes a +1.
Yep. And okay. The idea is that these are a word or a phrase that embodies something distinctive about your character, and they should be at least a little bit specific. So, like, talented is way too broad, but swashbuckler or flunked out of magic school or things like that are all like, these tell you something about your character. And it's like a little thing where somebody looks at it like,
it's like the thing in the yearbook.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to look at the one most likely to be a wizard. But these are all things that, like, you know, give flavor about your character, but they also come up when you, since you don't have your big list of skills, like in crunchier games, what this is like, if you're making a role to do something and you go, hey, my experience is relevant here. You know, like if you're attempting to say swing across a chandelier and you're like, hey, my +2 experience in swashbuckler is relevant here, then you can spend, and I agree because you're Errol Flynn at the point, you can spend a hope, which is a currency in this game, to basically add one of your experiences to the result of your role. And this is, this is how your character's background comes into play to help you do stuff. So if you want to think about that, we can go around to the other people. Connections are a little more straightforward. Every class has a set of 3 questions. And once everybody has their characters down and we know who your characters are, you guys are going to ask those questions of each other to create connections between your character. And I just listen and write down notes when my cat is not laying on my notebook. So let's go to Joe next.
Hi. All right. So I'm kind of far along aside from like the connections portion of it. I knew I wanted to play like a ranger type class because I haven't really done that in a while. And I was really interested in their version of animal companions, which is called the Beastbound. When looking at their, the different, heritages, or I forget what they call it. I don't know if they're races.
Heritage, you're correct.
Yeah. So looking at the different heritages, I saw that basically Simia or monkey people was an option. And I thought that was really neat because the last time I had seen that was, well, in a questionable release from a certain other company. And I just like the idea. I thought it was kind of interesting that, hey, I could play a ranger who happens to also be a monkey man. And then looking through it, the idea is essentially that this is going to sound really goofy, but I've been rereading and re-listening to the Lord of the Rings books. And unfortunately for me, unfortunately for me, that makes me like, oh, you know, Ranger, Strider. Okay, like, let's start looking at some of this stuff and like going into the wild places and things like that. So I also chose to focus on a couple things that I think were important to a Ranger. So like my experiences, I wanted to, you know, I figured, hey, hunting to survive is a thing, right? So that's one of the experiences. I hunt to survive. And also being away from civilization, you know, for long periods of time, I thought was also something that is relative for them or important for them, especially if they're like forging new trade paths or scouting or doing something that keeps them away from civilization for long periods of time. So it's like I have gone long stretches without being around civilization for like more survivalist type stuff. I figured that would apply to that. It also gives some spell stuff, which I thought was interesting as well, where you can do things like, well, there's an abilities and spells and different domains, which we haven't really talked about yet. So my domains that I chose were Bone and Sage. Bone is the domain of mastery of swiftness and tactical mastery, which I figured was appropriate for a ranger type. So I thought that was cool. And then the Sage with the domain of... this is the domain of the natural world. So I figured being connected to sort of nature and being like one that lived among nature for an extended period of time, that would make sense, right? So I kind of tried to go around that. And then with the Beastbound, your beast levels up with you and it can be basically whatever you want it to be, your companion. So mine's a mongoose named Kevin because I really wanted a mongoose named Kevin. And you get traits for them and they do level up and get abilities as you move through, where Kevin's abilities are traits are sneak and run. Kevin is also a very good hunter because F snakes.
That's very fitting for a mongoose.
Exactly. And I can use my action to roll to command my companion, to take advantage if they're using one of their companion traits, and they do have a little damage thing, so they can, my little buddy can help me out. And then equipment and stuff like that, I just went with some of the basic stuff, like I, you know, leather armor, short bow, a saber for physical contact or hand-to-hand combat, which I never want to be in, and then just kind of wanted to give him a good like worn look. So one of the things is the description, and this is kind of what I went with it, and I figure I'll share that here because why not. So pronouns, my character, who goes by Benny, is a they them has really deep brown eyes, the color of fresh mud. The color of the fur is deep browns and blacks, but has a really big bushy white mustache because of Emperor Tamarin. All of the clothes are natural and muted and well-worn, and he's a very thin, wiry body that's built for, you know, basically being lithe, being stealth, and not being there. And they tend to be very cautious and thoughtful. They're not very brash, which most of my characters tend to usually skew on the very loud side. So I figured I would go the opposite direction for once. I guess we'll go through the background stuff because I thought it was interesting, too. One of the questions is like, a terrible creature hurt your community and you vowed to hunt it down. What is it? And what unique trait or sign does it leave? And of course I went with a snake because I figured a giant snake, a snake-like creature. I don't know. Maybe it's not a snake, but it leaves a distinct trail and aspects of its venom behind. one of the things I thought was really interesting is your first kill almost killed you too. What was it? And what part of you was never the same? And I put just a kobold or whatever the equivalent is in this world, because I haven't really read through the book as far as the other, you know, mobs go. But I saw the light fade from its eyes and decided I would rather not be up close and personal if I could avoid it. And then the travel dangerous lands, one place I'll never refuse to go. I haven't named that one yet because I don't know what's in the world yet. We'll figure that out. And there's you. I've rambled about my wonderful little monkey person, Benny.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm done.
I have come up with experiences, I think.
Yay! Very
except cool. That they're really long, too long for the field. Oops.
Well, we can work on trimming them down to something like pithy little phrases. I'm going to jump in on a couple things Joe touched on here. Whereas in D&D you had, I think they have actually moved away from the word race towards heritage or ancestry. In Daggerheart, what you would think of as your ancestry heritage is made up of two parts. One is your ancestry, which is literally what species are. And one is your community, which is what kind of environment did your character grow up in?
Oh, yeah, I'm a wildborn. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I guessed, but... and each of these has an effect on your character. Like, Joe is Benny is wildborn, which means that his movement is naturally silent, and he has advantage on any action rolls to move without being heard, and he has the ability to spend that hope resource that we talked about earlier to grant it to somebody else. Benny can help other people sneak better because of his upbringing in the wilds away from civilization. And, the Samaya are based on all kinds of simian creatures. They mentioned you can, you know, anywhere from the largest gorilla to the smallest marmoset, and they tend to range, although obviously it's your own choice, from 2 to 6 feet tall. And they have all kinds of very cool concept art here of all kinds of marmosets and chimpanzees and big old gorilla wizards and stuff.
They have tiny monkeys that are like finger size.
Yeah. They're really cool, and they're all uniquely agile, and they're very good at balancing and climbing. So I like where you're going here. And the other thing that Joe mentioned is domains. Besides your built-in features of your class for being, you know, I'm a ranger, I'm a beastborn ranger, I have a pet, I'm a divine wielder seraph, I can, you know, throw my weapon like Thor. you also have access to two domains, which are kind of two themes that go along with each class. And they all overlap. Every class has two of them right now, and they kind of form a circle if you lay them out.
Is that the thing that says subclass on my sheet?
No, subclass will be for you. That's, you mentioned your
domain effects.
Be like your troubadour or your wordsmith. But these are like at the top of the bard. I think it's grace and I don't remember the other one.
It's grace and codex.
Grace and Codex. I was going to guess Grace and Splendor, and that is wrong. But each of these is, except they're loosely, they're kind of a loose grouping of themes of abilities. Like Bone is the domain of mastery over swiftness and tactical mastery, or Codex, which you mentioned for Thistle, is the domain of intensive magical study. And you get to pick up powers from your codexes, or from your domains as well as your class, to kind of define your character. And so, for example, codexes, your abilities might literally be, I have this named magical book that gives me 3 spells that I can cast. Or like grace is the domain of charisma, which I guess you would expect for a bard, but they can do things like tell stories or charm people or lie. Or I think a lot of them also deal with relieving stress, because I guess
bards are
cool with helping you blow off stress.
It's like, it's called inspirational words, and you basically imbue your speech with power, and you can use that to like clear a stress, heal a hit point, gain a hope.
That's
to an ally. Yeah.
I'm going to double back and touch on something on fairies that you didn't talk about. It is mentioned in the ancestry section that fairies, and for Daggerheart fairies, they can be any height, but some of them even grow up to be as tall as 7 feet tall. But they are all have some kind of insect-like features. And I'm curious what kind of insect-like features your fairy.
She has bug eyes, like literally bug eyes. So I didn't go into any of her details or anything, right?
I mean, that's fine.
Let me go into that. Pronouns of she, her. Her clothes are kind of like a bit ragged from travel and wear, but they're in a colorful array of layers, kind of like wildflowers. But her eyes, I have them listed as shimmering pools of bioluminescent water. They're like these glowing blue weird beetle eyes.
That is 10 times cooler than any bug eye I was picturing.
So. And she's got little antenna, like little beetle antenna kind of things. But the rest of her is pretty humanoid. She is short. She is like teeny. She is a tiny fairy. And her body is kind of the color of moss-covered bark, almost a little bit. Kind of like the image that I picked, the thumbnail. It was one of their generic thumbnails. I was like, ooh, that looks really cool. But there were background questions about her. And with her, I did a couple of different things. Hang on. Sorry, I've got I have to push to talk, and that means I can't scroll on the sheet to look at the thing. But she is a bard, but she's not a music bard. She is a talking bard, so she's a wordsmith. And in her background, she's a fairy, obviously, that's her ancestry, but she's a wanderborn, and the wanderborn move with what they call nomadic packs, which is like this bag that she carries around, and once per session, I can use a hope to reach into the pack and pull out something that's useful to the situation at hand, just like a common item, which is, that sounded cool to me, but the other thing is that as being part of the Wanderborn community, you are basically part of a nomadic troop. And I kind of used nomadic group as placeholder text, but the more I've been thinking about it over the past couple of the days, the more I've kind of landed on her group that she was traveling with was like a group of archaeologists and people that were out there to dig up cool things and look at stuff and history and tell stories to people and that kind of thing. So wandering troupe, not necessarily performers, although there were some performers in the group, but it was performers that were picking up money so they could do more digs, which is what they were really after. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you guys go out to go out to ruins and you dig in the cool stuff and then you tell people stories and you probably embellish them with your magical words about what we found in the ruins.
Yes, and she's really chatty. So the background questions that she had, the first one was, who from your community taught you to have such confidence in yourself? And her answer was, a really big talking oxen that pulled one of the carts. He could talk and he was really big and he never, ever, ever gave up. So under experiences, the first one is that one fairy in charge of the oxen who is weirdly good with animals, because that was her role within her community. Was they were like, please go give the animals some water. Please go feed the things. Would you just stop talking and go do something useful? And she was really good with all of the, they just all liked her. They all just kind of liked her and she liked them. Don't know if there's any kind of magical connection there or anything. I don't think so, but it's mostly, she's just good with animals. You know, she's a natural creature, so she's good with nature stuff.
She's probably pulling treats out of that Wanderborn pack. I don't know what's up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the other ones was, you were in love once. Who was it with and how did they hurt you? And this one says, there was a mushroom boy I liked a lot. He said he liked me too. We spent a few seasons together. He even joined my group. But it turned out he was part of a long con. He was just there to get in our good graces and then guide the group to pick up some smuggled goods and take them where they needed to go. Once he got what he needed, he left. I was just what he called a, air quotes, pleasant distraction. I hope the itching powder I left in all the clothes in his pack before he left was also a pleasant distraction. Jerk. And then the last question on there was, you've always looked up to another bard. Who are they and why do you idolize them? And She says, Gerald was a very, very, very old human in my group who took me under his wing. Not literally, he was human, of course. He didn't have wings like me. And taught me about music. I've never been very good at playing, but he discovered I have a knack for words, lyrics and poems and sagas and epics. He said there's just as much weight in words as a melody, and both can serve you as well as weapons most days. Jared passed on about 5 years ago, but I'll never, ever, ever forget him. Someday I want to write down everything he taught me. It would be a very big book.
That is cool.
Yeah, that's like her background stuff. So like... the second experience thing that I have for her is fast-talking Fae that will talk you out of or talk you into doing questionable things and or giving her questionable stuff. She's really good at talking to people and convincing people to do stuff.
Kind of like a fast-talking enabler almost.
Kind of, yeah. It's more okay. Like she's really good with words and she knows what words to say to make you do things.
Okay.
Worrying. Kind of worrying.
So if you want that as an experience, which like I said, the experiences are designed to be like short phrases or words, you could go as simple as fast talker or something like,
yeah.
You know, even something like you'll do what I want.
I love that. Okay. I'll go do that.
Which is maybe a little more sinister, but I don't know. It could just be fun until it doesn't need to be.
Hmm.
All right. Let's talk to. Oh, there's a Liz noise. Let's talk to Liz. Liz, tell us what you're thinking about your character. Or
see, here's characters. The problem is I have several characters and I don't know what direction I want to go in. Everyone else has one good idea and I have like lots of ideas and I don't know where to go. One of them is a druid warden of renewal, but it's a clank, which is a robot person. And my idea here was that I just thought this would be the weirdest thing I could do would be a shape-shifting druid robot.
Like Bastion!
Okay, that See? Is true.
It's not that outrageous because clanks can also be made from natural materials. You could be a wooden and clay clank even too, or you could be like Bastion.
He just got lost in the woods for a while. But the idea was they were built by someone to like serve as like a bodyguard kind of personal assistant kind of role. So some of it was kind of bodyguardy and some of it was probably like, oh, look at this amazing, very expensive robot I had commissioned for me because it, you know, kind of a power play. I'm not really sure what happened to get them from there to here, but clearly something very bad happened in the meanwhile, and now they're on their own and adventuring. I just like the concept of a clank druid, and they're primarily focused on shape-shifting, and it's like a little kind of transformer thing. It like turns into like, yeah, it's a wolf, it's a kitten, it's whatever it wants to be.
It's a transformer!
Exactly! Great. It's great.
Talking about being somebody's bodyguard and then being out in the woods and shape-shifting, I really like this concept art they have for a clank. Have you looked at the ones in the book yet?
I have seen the one in the book, kind of the basic art for the clank. It's like playing a lute or something.
Oh, no, there's one that's got like black and white sketches, two pages of them for clanks. I want to pop this into chat. Look at this.
Man, I need to go look.
This centaur clank that's number two.
Centaur clank?
Yeah, it's like a four-legged body with like a humanoid torso and they're wielding a lance, but I could just as easily see that being like
horsepower.
Maybe somebody commissioned this as like a it's definitely got a horn and like a cool mane and like weird like robot legs on the back. But there's also the one on the lower left, the number five, that just straight up looks like the Witch of the Woods, but it's a robot.
I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing about clanks is that they can be like they don't have a set appearance like Warforged in Dungeons and Dragons. They're
five looks like Baba Yaga, like a robotic Baba Yaga.
It does.
Like you can decide what you were constructed for, what your purpose was, and sort of your appearance and your personality and your character grows from there. So I mean, I had the idea you have like some rich person who is like, okay, I want like a really cool transformer robot, build it for me. And so you kind of have this something that's built to be like a show of wealth and built to be sort of a performer, even if they had a practical use. So I think it's an interesting idea. I haven't quite fleshed out how they get from there to being an adventurer. I love the idea of a clank druid, though.
I think it's pretty cool. I think if you want to go down that road, there's definitely a lot of neat stuff. I'm just going to click on here.
Another one I was looking at was a syndicate rogue, because I think syndicate's a really interesting subclass for rogues, because it's not about like, ooh, I'm going to stab things better, or I'm going to hide better, or I'm going to steal things better. It's about having connections wherever you go. You're a member of like a syndicate, no matter where you are. You know someone, you can ask for favors, you can maybe you owe someone a favor, and you just have all of these connections. So I had the idea that they're someone like taking it in a direction where they're not an assassin or a thief. They're in like an artisan's guild that's so it's kind of going at it from this really non-combat perspective and making a character who's a rogue but is also built to be a more social character, a character who knows everybody, a character who can talk their way out of things. And it's interesting that you can build, I mean, the whole point of this is that I find it's interesting to build a rogue like this. Because yeah, we were talking earlier.
It's absolutely possible, because one of the domains for the rogue is grace, which is their overlap with the bard. But that means exactly. You have access to skills that we would think of as like charisma skills, like taking advantage on rolls to lie to people, or forcing people to focus on you, or even inspiring people. But then, but then if you need to, you can also dip over into standard rogue things, like being able to pick locks, disarm traps, and steal things from people, or a really cool disguise skill that almost sounds halfway magical. So, yes.
And, I mean, artisan guilds can be pretty competitive. So, you know, sometimes maybe you just need to stab someone in self-defense. It could happen. So, yeah. You need to learn these things. You need to learn these practical life skills. And I decided this character had to be a ribbit because someone has to play a ribbit. A ribbit, of course, being a frog. And it's a frog with lots of really great mercantile connections and maybe slightly shadier connections made along the way.
Yeah, so you become almost more like that. You're less of like the traditional rogue, and you're like the black market merchant at that point. Like, I can get you what you need, and you owe me a favor. That's really cool. Okay,
and my third idea was how do I say this? Galapa? A turtle? Galapa,
yeah. A Galapagos.
Galapa. Ah, yes. A Galapa wizard. And this is another thing. I thought wizard is a really interesting class because, again, you get those overlapping domains. And wizard has codex, which is kind of a hard spellcasting domain, and splendor, which is kind of a healing domain. It's all about life and things like that. So I thought, okay, well, this would be cool. I can make a wizard who's kind of like a healer, but also focusing on kind of hard wizardly stuff. And
doing some hard wizarding.
Hard wizarding. Yes, with my 2 minor damage threshold, I've totally got this. I kind of developed this whole idea of she has, like, she doesn't have a spell book. She has, like, a book of embroidery patterns, and her, like, prepared spells are, like, little embroidery hoops she carries around. So it's, like, a character that's very crafty. Like, this isn't traditional, like, I'm a wizard, I've spent all my time studying books. It's kind of more about, I've studied, but it's more about, like, pulling at the threads of reality, which are represented by these crafting things, like things like the embroidery she carries around. I don't know where I came up with that idea, it just sort of evolved, because one of the things about the character sheet, as a wizard, it asks you, what do you carry your spells in? What kind of spell book do you have? And I'm like, well, spell book's really boring. Where can I go with this? And it kind of evolved from there into something else. And I set her up as a highborn because I had this idea that she was like raised in a noble household, but as like a servant, but she's got all of these connections in this world. She's sort of integrated into this world. And again, this is another one. I have a concept. I don't know how they got from where this background is to where they are now an adventurer running around with embroidery hoops. Because why not? Why not? It's already a turtle person. So those are my three big ideas. And I don't know which direction I want to go. Do we should we vote or something? I'm not sure how to go with this.
Well, we can maybe come back to it later. I know Nick was saying somewhere that, Matt was saying somewhere that Anne's character may have given them an idea of what character to play. So maybe if we hear from Matt and Nick and circle back to you, maybe that's something more fine there. Let's go ahead and Matt, you've been making lots of characters and they're all very cool. So, but you seem like you might have settled on one.
Well, I've been going back and forth on which one I wanted to play the most. The warrior I made was just almost an in-joke. Like, it was just my WoW character.
I was going to say, wasn't the icon a night elf?
Yeah, it's even a night elf, yeah. But then I came up with a backstory I actually liked for her. So then I was like, ooh, okay, now this is actually kind of a cool backstory. It's got a lot of hooks in it. But then I the two I made that I was the most originally enamored with were, one was a giant who was an elemental sorcerer, the elemental origin sorcerer, who... her people used to bury her every night because they were afraid of her power. And so they would make her sleep in the ground. Essentially, they would literally put her in a box and bury her. And then in the morning they'd dig her up and she could go forth and do her daily things. But then at night they'd bury her again. As you might expect, this was not something she liked. And so she snapped. And one day she killed everybody. She didn't mean to. They were lowering her to the ground again, and she could hear the dirt being dumped onto the casket, and she just snapped and caused an earthquake, and everybody died, and she cut her way out of the ground and just wandered off, kind of traumatized because she'd destroyed everything she ever knew and loved. But they were burying her in the ground every night, so it was kind of you deserved it, guys. And the other one though is one that I am right now. This is the one I'm going for. And this is the orphan, I call them, who is a wanderborn clank seraph, the winged sentinel subclass. And essentially, this is, at first glance, this is an ancient suit of armor from who knows when. So old, nobody has ever seen anything like it. The materials it's made of, some of them don't even exist anymore. Like, there's a kind of weird alabaster white metal that is completely unlike anything that's around now. And they were buried in the ground forever. And in my original idea, I made them a wanderborn because I thought, well, this group of people came and dug them up. And as gratitude, they were like, well, I will protect you now because you have allowed me to begin to discover who I am and what I should be doing. So when Anne was talking about her thing, I'm like, ooh, okay, wait, that would dovetail. That would work really nice if the group of archaeologists that her character was hanging out with, my character could very easily be integrated because they would literally just be following them around and making sure nothing happened to them. So basically, I went with the Winged Seraph, Winged Sentinel, because I like the idea of the flying thing. And I like the idea of a clank because literally just be wandering around with no idea of its real purpose because unlike a lot of the other clanks, what did I see what I worked on here? Because I have the details thing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
First one is what kind of clothes do you wear? And it's like, I'm naked. I'm a big robot that looks like a suit of armor. I don't wear clothes. Why would I bother? I don't have anything to hide. And people who look at me think I'm armor anyway. So that's the first one. The eyes, and I'm literal amethysts. I have two amethysts, four eyes. They are right there in my helmet. And body, that's, again, it's this really fancy suit of gold and and orichalcum and platinum and whatever that alabaster metal is, and all sorts of fantastic stuff. And, you know, what do they want? It's like attitude. You know, the orphan is like, wants to explore and experience. It's kind, welcoming, and very friendly. And it's very protective. It wants to make sure everybody is safe. Like it doesn't have any, it feels like people are like children, not like all of them. It doesn't matter what they are, who they are. Everybody it meets, it thinks is like kind of like a child who needs to be protected, but not like, you know, talk down to them or patronize them. Just like everyone is precious. You're all precious because you're all a fragment of the cosmic tapestry. And the reason that the character feels like this is like, who is the god you have devoted yourself to, and what incredible feat did they perform for you in a moment of desperation? And the god I was created to serve is dead. Like, the whole point was, I was created from the ruined armor of an ancient army of a fallen god to avenge its usurpation by the new gods. Because in the game's detail stuff, there's this thing about that these new gods came along and overthrew the old gods who are now the fallen. It's in the, I think, the demon people backstory.
Yeah, it's kind of hinted at in a few places, but the idea is that the fallen gods are your not necessarily evil, but definitely overthrown gods.
Yeah.
And they are the ancestors of what would be the tiefling equivalent, the demons.
Yeah. Well, demons? One of those guys didn't survive. They were destroyed during the war. But the last thing they did was reach out to their army and create one perfect vessel to supposedly go forth and get revenge, except it's dead, so it's not here to tell me that. My character has no idea what it's for, because it doesn't know anything about the god that made it, other than it has its symbol. Like, it's carrying around one of its symbols. It's like kind of wearing it on its neck. And it's like, how did your own appearance change after taking your oath? It's like, I did not exist before I took my oath, and I became an avatar of my fallen lord. I desire to gain justice, and so it's like all about that. It's about justice and protecting people, and doesn't understand what it's doing here. It doesn't really, the world that I'm in has no, it's no connection. Like, I don't even know who half these people are. Like, I don't know what they are. Like, we didn't have people like that back then, but that's fine. Doesn't matter. Everybody needs to be taken care of, and everybody is equally worthy. And then it's like, in what strange or unique way do you communicate with your god? And it's like, I don't. It's dead. Literally, its last essence is inside me. I'm essentially a walking shrine for my god. And that the only place where you can contact my god or do anything with it is me. Like, there's no place else. No one else can pray to it. Nobody. It doesn't. I'm not even trying to spread the word of my god, because there's no word to spread. It's gone. But I am all that remains. And so whatever I do with it is what my god wants done. By definition, because there's nobody to contradict me on it. So that was my thing. And I haven't answered any of the questions, the connections, but I think I've got ideas now, which is why now I pretty much know I want to play this character.
People would like them very much.
Yeah. Like, this character, I now know I want to play, because while I do like, Mogor, my yak, just for, if nothing else, just for his experience things. Like, the first one for him was, I am yak, I will help. And the second one was, I will help even if I have to trample you underfoot. It was like, okay.
I saw that and I was like, wait, is this the ox that like inspired?
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, actually. But when you said you had a yak who helped you, I was like, oh, that could have been Mogor, although Mogor wouldn't have known what he said.
No.
Mogor would have been like, I don't know, if it meant something to you, great. But
part is like, chances are this ox that she's talking about didn't actually talk to her or anything. She's having imaginary conversations.
That's fine. It. Or, you know, just assuming that the yak meant something. I gotcha.
But they were very inspirational imaginary conversations.
But
or you just had like the one magical yak that happened to be there.
Maybe. Who knows? Yeah.
But for the experiences, the first one I went with is Last Vestige of a Forgotten God, because, you know, obviously. And that just means that every so often, like when we're doing a skill thing, my character might just pipe up with, have you tried doing this? That's what we did in the temples of old. And they'd be like, huh? And you'd be like, well, yeah, I think we did that in temples of old. I don't know. It's just in here. And the other one was, originally I was unyielding, but I changed it to, I will not break, which is, you can kill me. You can destroy me utterly, but you can't deviate me from my purpose, which is to protect. I will protect until I'm gone. And if you want to end me, you can do that, but you can't make me be something else.
My first thought was, you can't kill them in any way that matters.
Yeah, you can't. There's nothing left. I am the I'm the last thing. I don't even have the ability to tell other people about my god because there's nothing to tell them. Like, I don't know anything about it. I don't remember what its tenets were. I don't know what of the new gods usurped it. So I don't even know who to, if I was trying to get revenge for it, I don't even know who to get revenge on. And so that's why I'm not doing that. Like, what would the point be? I like to help people because people helped me, and I don't see any reason not to. You know, even bad people, even evil people, I would prefer not to hurt them. And it's like a lot for me in terms of how I think about how the Orphan fights. The Orphan fights in a, okay, let's get this done. Let's get this over with. I don't want to spend a lot of time. I certainly don't want to be having fun here. If I have to kill you, I want to kill you quickly and get on with my life, you know, but I would really rather not kill you. So that's him right now. That's what I've got them. Sorry. I keep saying him, but it's very definitely not a him. It's a them, a they, or even a we sometimes.
I was going to say when they pipe up unknowingly with the words of their dead god, it suddenly, mm-hmm. suddenly becomes we and everyone's like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Like there's stuff in there that the Orphan doesn't know about. There's stuff in there that they have no idea.
You see why I said this was the one that excited me the most when I opened it.
Yeah, it's
I opened these sheets and I was just like, delicious, just hooks everywhere.
I try to put hooks in when I can. So yeah, so that's right now. I think I see ways that I could connect my character to Anne's. If Liz went with the Clank Druid, I could see ways I could try to connect with that because I'd be like, wow, which god made you? And you'd be like, it wasn't a god. It was just some guy. Oh, well, clearly a god must have been working through them because
it was it was just some rich asshole. I don't know why you keep asking this.
Well, because some god made me, but I don't know who. So I've always been curious.
See, and Thistle would also be fascinated with the druid Clank that turns into mechanical animals.
Yes, that's very interesting.
All right. Well, let's hear from our last player, Nick. What are you thinking about over there?
So, sorry. I was also leaning towards a seraph, but instead of the winged sentinel, I was gonna hit the other one, which is divine wielder. Basically, instead of taking flight, this one is. You know, you have a melee weapon equipped. It can fly from your hand to strike an enemy. Or it's called Spirit Weapon. When you have a melee in your hand equipped, it can fly from your hand, strike an enemy, and return to you. And because it reminds me so much of a lightsaber throw, I thought, that is so cool, I cannot pass up. But part of what and this is where I was waiting for the session zero, because I think one of the things that's like integral about the playtest is that people see and people play with the different classes. So while I know that I can probably like tie in the idea for the seraph that I had in with Matt's, because the character story that I had come up for them was they're someone that was at least at one point in time very much in tune with their god and their like religious order. But because of like a drastic, humongous failure, not so much. And for another seraph that is, you know, essentially searching for their place in the world and where they came from, that's like I could see how that would be interesting. Like those two different perspectives could mesh for like, you know, good storytelling, which is also what Daggerheart is at its core is about, right?
I totally get you. I can see where that would work. Mm-hmm. I mean, for like the first time we meet and I'm like, oh, so you serve one of the usurpers, and you'd be like, what now? Oh, sorry, I don't know why I said that.
Yeah, like usurping who? Define this for me, please. Let's educate each other, you know. And
I just like the idea that like Thistle's troop has just elected a bunch of robots, like old robots.
I know.
Yeah, you've got a small robot army.
This is a small robot army.
I mean, not a small robot army like in size, but you know, quantity for now. And maybe that's a running bit. Who knows?
But you keep digging up things. Eventually, you're going to find robots. I mean, that's just hit the mother load of robots. We got a big seam of robots down here.
Hit an active vein of robots.
Yeah.
Everyone at one point in time in this Daggerheart universe has attempted to create a robot. out of various things. This is we're going to make it canon from the playtest. But
just a rich cache of robots.
Now, because, and you know, we talked about earlier, like the play what you want to play. Like I'm cool with playing. I was kind of like Liz, where I think the Seraph was my more thought out character, but mm-hmm. I also have like four other like half completed character sheets of different things. And I think that if I might also just, it's easy enough for me to have pivoted some aspects of the Seraph backstory into a Guardian backstory as well. Because if we're going to go with the story of, or the backstory of Failure, then the Guardian subclass Vengeance could be a very good tie-in for that. And then the background questions also as, who from your community did you fail to protect and why do you still think of them? Which was, you know, for the Seraph, the question is, where did you go? There you are. Who is the god you have devoted yourself to and what incredible feat did they perform for you? It was originally going to be something like, I vowed to protect the last scion of religious order, and when an opposing group attempted to kill them, our god imbued me with my seraphic talent. Ultimately, I failed and they were killed in front of me. Very easy to pivot that over. I like that thread, so I'm probably going to keep that in some way, shape, or form. And I just wanted to throw this out there. So, who here seen True Detective Season 1?
Oh yeah, I did.
I have not.
I've sort of absorbed it through cultural osmosis.
So, Matt McConaughey's character, Russ Cole, claims to have synesthesia, which is when he absorbs any stimulation through a certain sense, it triggers another sense.
It's like when you could taste words.
Taste words, taste color, taste sound.
You say seeing sound is a fairly common.
Seeing sound, yeah.
And I know someone like that.
In their life, yeah.
I know someone that when they hear certain sounds, random colors will like flash across their eyes. And I thought, how cool would that be if to be able to communicate with your god, especially one that's probably mad at you because you have no idea when, where, or what will trigger a certain sound or color like combination. And then as soon as you see or hear that, you just have this deep gut-wrenching feeling, ugh, I'm in for it. I'm going to hear something and I'm probably not going to like it. But going over to the Guardian's character, background characters, questions, it's who from your community did you fail to protect and why do you still think of them? Probably more in line, can do more tweaking with it. But then it also doubles down on you've recently been tasked with protecting something important with the goal of delivering it somewhere dangerous. What is it and where does it need to go? I like that as like a natural segue and continuation of the plot or the backstory thread that I want to hold on to. And the last one is you've always felt uncomfortable in your skin. What are you self-conscious of? I'm going to try not to go too on the nose and choose something that I'm self-conscious of in real life. Who knows with this one, but so far I'm coin tossing it. I like the idea of both, but in terms of variety, I think I might end up leaning towards Guardian, like, you know, and I want to preface it, like, I'm totally fine with that. I'm flexible with it. Which is also like when we talk about session zeros, like as players, I do think that that's something that to a degree, everything needs to be a conversation, right? Like,
yep.
Everything needs to be a conversation. And there's a certain degree of like flexibility that and grace that you should, you know, give others as well as yourself. And this is one of those things where it's like, I think Matt's background character or Matt Beck's character and background story are really interesting. And I want to let him have that moment with this one shot with this specific class, which means I'm okay with pivoting over to Guardian. Which I probably will. And if I do, or since I probably will, I'm going to keep holding on to one of the experiences that I made for the Seraph originally, which was rated E for everyone. And
originally, you explain that one.
Originally, I had the Seraph as choosing their melee weapons were hand runes. And it was just going to be a thing of because of the background story of you got jumped and someone important to you got killed because you were overwhelmed by a larger group of people and you've spent your life learning how to fight in big groups, right? These hands are rated E for everybody and you're ready for it.
Yep.
Yeah, that I like it. Yeah, I think if you wanted to try it as a guardian, I think it definitely makes sense as a guardian. Like you said, that vengeance, the vengeance subclass is listed as play the vengeance if you want to strike down enemies that hurt you or your allies. I think it definitely makes sense. I think either one would work.
But yeah, that's where I'm leaning towards. Obviously, I'd have to do another experience. Well, another experience because it's. I see on the generate one, it's 0 of 3, but it's. I can't tell if that's 3 experiences or it's just because 1 is plus 2 and 1 is plus 1.
1 will be plus 2 and 1 will be plus 1.
Right. Okay. So it's for a total of 3.
Yeah. I think it's a little open-ended like that because some classes, heritages, etc. can end up with more experiences or add more to experiences like the
Clank. Rossi has... Yeah, I think Rossi's got more. Yeah, I know.
The Clank just gets to add 1 to one of their experiences at that point because of what they're built for. Their heritage, their ancestry tree is purposeful design. Decide who you were created by and for what purpose. When you generate your experiences at character creation, choose one that reflects this purpose and add plus 1 to it. And so he's added plus 1 to I will not break, bringing it to a total of plus 3.
Yeah, mine, ooh. I put the plus 2 on weirdly good with animals just because that's what she's been doing her whole time with her group here. So that's the one that she's like really, really, really into. And also, it's unexpected.
Okay. So it sounds like we got 3 characters fairly well locked down. Nick, kind of sounds like you're leaning towards a guardian of some kind. You may have said, and I may have missed it, what kind of ancestry and community were you thinking for that?
I didn't. So the ancestry would be elf, and the community, I think in this context, the one that would make the most sense would be Orderborn. With the Orderborn, being part of an Orderborn community means you were raised in a place of great discipline and or faith, and you uphold a set of principles that reflect your experience there.
Cool. Yeah, and their ability to record 3 sayings or values your upbringing instilled in you. Once per short rest, when you describe how you're embodying one of these or your current action, you can roll a higher die for your hope die. That's cool.
Yeah, I only have 1 dedication, maybe, but it could also be an experience. I got a waffle on that one.
I mean, you've got some time before we actually start playing, but
yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like we've kind of got a 4th one. Liz, is this helping you make a decision at all?
I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards the Clank Druid or the Frog Rogue, except I feel like the Frog Rogue just kind of exists. I mean, I thought it was a cool class concept and frogs.
It's this art you put in chat, isn't it? This adorable little rotund frog.
With yes. Or do you think about it on a Wednesday?
He looks so grouchy.
Well, you would be grouchy too if you were a small frog living in a big, scary world in which you have to defend yourself.
What I love knives. Is that it looks like the hood that he's wearing. It looks like the blue version of the assassination set from WoW.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? With the deadly daggers from Thunderstorm.
I don't know. Do y'all want to take a vote? Should I play a frog or a robot?
If you need a vote, I'd vote frog just because that is an adorable frog.
There's just something about being stabbed by an adorable
frog, you know?
I love the frog.
And you've said that the frog quote just exists, but I really think you bring this character to life. I think you could be the one who knows somebody everywhere.
Let's not undersell how hard it is to exist sometimes.
That's
it
true.
Is so hard.
Just existing, not easy.
So I did have the idea that this character was an underborn. So it's a frog who's an underground frog who has come up and is out in the world. So kind of a new environment, but they've been like doing trading and deals with everyone, and they know someone everywhere. And maybe the connection to the rest of the group is that, like, Anne's group is always, man, we're all tying back to Anne, aren't we?
No, it's kind of cool because I've got like this nomad group, right? But the nomad group could have like a purpose that like everybody kind of has a tie into. Because if your character is somebody who like knows all the things and the stuff, for that's cool because it helps them out when they're trying to go to places and,
well,
you know.
And I'll
spoil a little bit of the playtest adventure. So the playtest comes with pre-generated characters, and one of them is mandatory if you're using the pre-gens, because that character is the one who gathered the rest of the group for this purpose.
Oh.
We're going making characters, and everybody seems to have ties to Anne. Well, how can... I can finagle Thistledown into being the protagonist of this first one.
Do it.
But like my frog is a trader, so you could have come to me for supplies, or I could have made sure supplies found their way to you. Things like this. I know people everywhere, and I'm, you know, helping
you would
get
be
the good.
Super useful in the nomad group that we're like, because that's what we're doing, is we're going around and finding stuff, and then like in between finding stuff, we're like figuring out how to make money so we could go find more stuff.
And
having somebody who has that kind of knowledge would be super useful.
I don't see this character as being, you know, the Daggerheart character sheet doesn't talk about, like, you don't get like the D&D morality thing. Like, are you lawful or evil?
No.
Or, you know, but I see this character as like completely neutral in things. Like, they don't take sides. They're here to, you know, they're playing it fair with everyone until you don't play it fair with them. You know, they don't, it's like, for the most part, they don't have any skin in the game. They're here to make deals. They're here to trade and trade favors.
They're an NPM.
Yeah, they don't have, like, they don't lean anywhere. They don't have a, they might have a moral compass, but it's not like, oh, I must do good, or, oh, I must do evil. It's just, they're like, okay, let's make a deal. I'm a frog that's here to make deals and maybe stab people. Maybe.
I love the frog.
I think there's a lot there to work with. And I think especially when you get to the background questions for the rogue and you're generating your experiences, I think you'll find some stuff there. Feel out this frog a little more. Okay, so now that everybody's got at least a rough idea of their, you know, they may not have fully fleshed out your background yet, but you've got a heritage, you've got a class, you've got an idea of who you are. I want everybody on your character sheet to, in the builder, click experiences and click to create connections. And this is the part that you guys do all on your own with each other. And I don't have to do, so this is really fun. connections for people just listening and not looking at a character sheet like we are. Every character, I think these are class specific, in Daggerheart has three connections, which are questions you ask of the other characters to define a relationship and a personal history between you all. So, for example, since I was looking at the rogue, because we were talking about Liz's Frogo rogue, the frog, one of their connections is, what did I recently convince you to do that got us both in trouble? So at that, you know, when Liz is setting up her connection, she's going to ask one of the other characters, what one of the other players, what did I recently convince you to do that got us both in trouble? And they talk about how they got this little frog rogue and themselves in trouble. So I think we can just go around, maybe do these one at a time until everybody has all three. Sound good?
Yes.
Yep. Sure. If so, I'm gonna go ahead and start at the top again. Anne, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. So do I have to? So I ask one person one of these questions?
Yes. So the I'll read the actual instructions. Once everyone has shared, so at minimum you need your name, pronouns, character description. It says experiences, but I think we all have a feel for what your experiences are like. And then you share all that stuff with the other players. It says, once everyone has shared who they're playing, work together to decide how your character should connect it. The connections section of your character guide provides inspiration for these connections. It's recommended you pick at least one question to ask another PC, but you're welcome to create new questions. You can always turn down a question for another relationship or relationship for another player if it's not a good fit or not a relationship you're interested in exploring. So, for example, if you asked, you know, if Liz asked Rossi, what did they recently convince the orphan to do that got us in trouble? And he's like, oh, the orphan wouldn't do anything to get us in trouble. And it's like, well, okay, well, that's, he's not interested in that connection. So maybe you can take it to somebody else. But, and it's also fine if you're not sure about 100% of them yet, you can fill these out during play. But I'd like to get at least one, just because these really help create kind of organic ties between.
Okay, Liz, what's your frog's name? You're not sure yet, are you?
Arvid is what Arvid? I've written down, but it's A-R-V-I-D.
He or she?
She.
Arvid. So, Arvid, what made you realize we were going to be such good friends?
I'm not sure Arvid is the sort to, like, make good friends. Like, Arvid's going to be...
You can air quote the friends
yes,
if you want to.
Yes. Arvid is going to maintain good relations with everyone around them. Well, what made her think you would be good friends is that you are always in need of something, whether it's goods or connections or advice on where to go next, and she can provide that to you in exchange for money or future favors, or it's good to have a connection like that, someone who reliably needs things that she can provide in exchange for services yet to be rendered. I don't know.
Okay, cool. I just wrote down, you are always in need of something and I could provide that for you. It's good to have a connection like that. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Cool. I'm going to jump in here real quick. Nick, what is your guardian's name and pronoun?
Ao. He, him, his.
You want to spell that name for me?
Yeah, it's in Discord.
Okay.
Oh, I thought it was A-Y-O, like Ao!
I thought about it.
Anyway.
Or like AOE.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to have that down for on paper here. Joe, you want to go next?
Sure. Let's go with... Matt, what's your character's name again? The Seraph? Orphan. The Orphan. The Orphan. Why do you act differently when we're alone than when others are around?
I only need to focus on you when we're alone, whereas I have to focus on absolutely everybody around when we're around other people.
Okay.
I mean, I act differently. Like, every single one of you has seen me act differently when I'm alone with them. It just it is how my character is.
All righty. Liz, do you want us to... Are you ready to ask one, or do you want us to come back to you?
Wow, okay. I'll ask one.
The joy of alphabetical order, right?
Alphabetical order. Okay, who do I want to ask a question of? This is so hard. Joe, did I recently convince you to do that got us both in trouble?
So this is one of the ones that I think I would pass on.
Okay.
And the reason being, my character is a little more reserved, so I don't know that he would be or they would be easily swayed to do something.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
It's probably Anne's the most likely to get into trouble.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think of this whole down question. I was trying to think of other people to make experiences with, but let's go. Let's go, Anne. Let's do this.
Right.
What did
okay.
I convince you to do?
So, like, you know I'm really, really good with animals, which is really fantastic, but also you needed a distraction because there was something that you needed to grab from somebody else. And I don't know what it was. I don't care what it was. You came to me and asked me very, very nicely if I could run the oxen around the camp. And it wasn't a make a distraction for me kind of question. It was a, hey, can you make them do tricks? Could you make them do this thing? And I said, yes, absolutely, I can make them do that thing. And then I made them do that thing. And they got all up in everybody's grill. They ran through all of the hanging laundry all over the place. There were yaks running around with, like, underwear strewn over their horns. And, yes, I got into all kinds of trouble. But you did get the thing you were after, so that was good.
Yep, as I said, that was a Thistledown question. Okay, let's go to Matt.
Okay, Eow, what promise did you make me agree to should you die on the battlefield?
Oh, what promise?
That's was there.
I remember that one being there. I just forgot that some of the Seraph questions are just like, what did you make me agree to do if you die? Whoa.
Some of them, two of them.
We just went from running oxen to death wish, like.
Yeah. So when you eventually get
when
killed.
I die,
when you eventually get trampled by oxen,
when I die, you promised to bring back my sword to the, as of right now, unnamed religious order that exiled me.
Okay. Copied that down. Thank you.
I love it. Okay. And on that, Nick.
So since we've all decided canonically that Anne is the main character and that we all know each other through Anne, a.k.a. Thistle.
Oh, boy.
Anne slash Thistle, how did I save your life the first time we met?
So there was this ox. No. It wasn't the ox. It wasn't the ox. I was with a group of people, and there was like a really, really, really bad storm going on, and we were trying to find shelter. And when we were trying to find shelter, it was like hurricane winds, that kind of thing. No, not hurricane winds. It was more like a sandstorm in a desert, right? It was chaos. It was mass chaos. And I'm just a little fairy with like little tiny wings, and I was trying to fly, but there was no way I could hold up to those gusts. So I was literally getting carried away and about to be torn to shreds by just sand. And you grabbed me and saved me. I'm eternally grateful.
That is it. All right. I almost went to myself next, the connections. okay. Two free people from the tyranny of alphabetical order. I'm going to roll a die this time.
Ooh. There you go.
The magic D6 says Joe. If you have another connection you'd like to fill out, now's the time.
Okay, so we're going to go with... let's go with the Froggo. What have you asked me to keep an eye out for, and why are you worried about it?
Who'd you rip off?
I would never. I am all about making fair deals. I think that I would have asked you to keep an eye out for people, individuals who might be asking after me with a certain kind of livery about them, which I have not yet decided about. But if people are asking about me, I mean, sometimes that can be good. Sometimes people are just looking for a traitor. That's great that my name gets around. But sometimes it can be less positive.
There's somebody hunting for Arvid, isn't there?
Okay.
Possibly.
And who better than your sharp-eyed Simia friend? Hmm? All right. Let's die another roll. That was fun. 2, 3, 4, Matt.
Okay. Okay, I guess this one will go to... I know Kevin's name, but I'm having a hard time remembering
Benny.
Your name. Benny, okay. Why do you ask me so many questions about my god?
Because I'm not used to gods. I'm used to living off the land. Gods are new to me.
Alrighty. I got that typed in.
All right, straightforward and simple. Let's roll again. 1, 2, 3. Arvid slash Liz.
I'm gonna give this one to. This is so complicated and hard. These decisions. I'm going to ask Eo, what have I discovered about your past that I hold secret from the others?
Ooh.
With no backstory asks the person with no backstory.
That's the other person with no backstory. Okay. Everyone knows that my failure. That might be a little too dark for this. Slash also thinking about trigger stuff. Okay. Everyone knows that the order I served exiled me because I failed. But not everyone knows that it was a direct result of getting a prominent figure within that order killed.
Ooh, that's juicy.
And gossip has a cash value, which is why I'm not telling anyone unless I have a really good, really, really, really good reason.
Information is worth its weight in gold.
And then some.
It might be worth a handful of gold, per se. All right.
Maybe even two.
So I believe we are down to Anne and Nick. So another roll of the die. That's a one. Let's go with Anne.
Hey, Benny. What do I do that annoys you?
You don't know when to stop talking. Benny is a very quiet person by nature. And so you being a wordsmith and like constantly sort of like, I think having that sort of stream of consciousness, that's sort of like is a thing that he's just not in line with.
You got it.
See, she's probably like no one you grew up around. And you're like, does everyone talk this much outside the wilds?
I never want to visit your family.
All right. Last but not least, I'll need to roll for this one. Nick.
The orphan, what small gift did you give me that you notice I still carry with me?
That's interesting because I don't have a lot of stuff. When they dug me up, I was carrying a shield with me, but I didn't need it, or at least I said I didn't need it, so I gave it to you. I don't know if it's a usable shield. It might just be a decorative one. But if it's decorative, then you have a nice decoration. And if it's usable, you can use it as a shield.
Got it. Thank you.
That is cool. Does it also have the symbol of your god that no one knows anymore on it?
I think it is the symbol.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you unknowingly gave away your god symbol.
Because my character doesn't know who their god was or anything like that. My god doesn't remember anything consciously about them. So, I don't know what this is. Here, you can have it. It's big enough. You could block with it or something.
It's the right shape. It's a good weight. Okay, cool. So I'll leave it open for the last one. If anybody wants to fill in their third connection and you have someone in mind for it, go for it now.
I do.
Okay, Thistle.
The orphan. And I'm going to put a sometimes in here and not just to clarify. Why do you sometimes grab my hand at night?
You're so small. You're so easily killed. I have to make sure you're alive. You don't breathe or move. You just sleep like a rock. It's really disconcerting. You have to start, like, sometimes I poke you. So, you know, like, if you have a cat, your cat or dog just doesn't move when they sleep, and you're like, are you awake? Like that. I'm terrified that you're not here anymore.
Alrighty. Anybody else want to do their third connection?
I've got one that seems like it'd be really cool for, like, narrative purposes, like, at the more, like, during gameplay. So I want to leave it, toss it to the group, and anyone can jump in if they've got a good one. And it's going to be, what lie have you told me about yourself that I absolutely believe?
I was going to say, that does sound like Liz's character.
The thing that you gave me to hold is 100% not dangerous to my health.
Okay. Anybody else? I mean, I'm happy. I'm content with two, and you guys can also leave one open for during play, or maybe you don't fill it in because it doesn't fit any other characters. That's perfectly fine.
I just really wanted the third one to go to Orphan.
It's very cute. Orphan is very team mom.
Why don't you move? Why are you not? Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, okay.
You're moving again. Wiggled. Good. Keep doing that. The thing where you move. That's excellent. I got my third one, which I guess I've already asked Benny and an AR one. So I guess I'm gonna coin flip this. Heads. This is my adulting coin, the one I use to get grocery carts because I don't actually have any money. Heads. It's Thistle and Tails. It's Arvid. Is that your name, Arvid?
Arvid.
Okay. All right. Tails. Arvid, who have you told me is more important to save here than yourself?
Here as in our group?
Yeah, like if we're all getting attacked and someone's going to die and you want me to pick that other person instead of you.
I think EO. Am I saying that right, Nick? EO? AO?
AO.
AO. I see AO.
Yes, thank you. And?
I'm not going to elaborate on that.
Doesn't say anything about the reason. It says, who have you told me? All the question is. No. Feel free to volunteer the information.
And I'm flattered. Behind the scenes, I'm flattered.
You deserve your second chance. Not that I'm going to tell anyone that. I have one for Benny. What are you desperately trying to teach me that you fear I'll never understand?
That you don't need as many material possessions as you think you do.
Oh, that's good.
I like it.
That's very cool.
I'm already developing in-depth alternate ideas of this. Yes.
Yeah, see, like, one question, I'm already seeing, like, the vibe between those two characters. Packing up all her extra shit in her pack, and Benny's like, we gotta go. What do you, you don't need all this stuff.
Someone might need it, Benny. Someone might need it.
I mean, he's just a very practical... They're just a very practical entity.
They have, like, a satchel. And mm-hmm. Irving's got, like, six suitcases and a carry-on.
All right. I believe the last one without a third experience filled out is Benny. Do you want to fill that one out now, Joe, or leave it for later?
No. So this is one of the things that I think is interesting about the system, because a lot of the stuff is it's determined right now, at least on the beta, and this is probably something I will be giving feedback on, that it's sort of like predetermined questions. Some of them sort of pen you into a archetype or a potential like interaction that you may not necessarily want. Like my last question here is, what friendly competition do we have? I don't envision my character really caring about having a friendly competition, at least not at this time. Maybe that develops over time or something like that, but it seems like a weird set. So I'm probably wondering.
A weird immediate thing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's perfectly fine to not use that one. It's perfectly fine to substitute in one of your own. And as the game notes, these are just a starting block to build on. These aren't necessarily going to be the be all end all of your all's relationships. It's how you know each other to start with. It's perfectly feasible. Benny does not have a friendly competition with anybody. It doesn't seem like a friendly competition kind of.
No, it's not sort of the vibe that they're going for.
What would we even be competing with? Yeah. You know, I'm a ranger. I track things down and fight them. I keep you from dying. I'm going to keep you from dying even harder than you can kill other things.
Wow. Well, it's kind of like I envision it kind of like the Gimli Legolas thing, if anything, but like,
yeah. Not if Gimli is spending all his time keeping Legolas from getting shot, maybe.
One of the things it says about background questions is several prompts are provided to jumpstart inspiration, but you or the GM can modify or change these questions to fit the character you're looking to play. So I think these are really just, this is a starting point. This is if you don't have ideas, start here.
I just used them because it was convenient.
Yeah.
I thought they were interesting questions, though.
Yep. And as always, if anybody, if anybody has any better ideas for background things or connections between now and our actual first session, please feel free to bring that up. Like there's one of the ones for the rogue. It automatically assumes that you've been exiled from your home community. That might not necessarily be true.
Yeah.
But, I came in without really... I had some ideas about what my Frogo would be like, and you come look at these prompts and say, maybe she was exiled from her community. How would that have happened? And go from there. But it would be nice if they had like twice as many prompts, because it's nice to have those prompts as a jumping off point, but they do assume some very specific things about your character.
Yeah, it would be better if you could pick three out of a list.
Yeah,
They had the whole kit and caboodle of them, like all of the examples that they came up with, instead of having them split up like three per class or
also
ancestry or whatever. Yeah, it would be cool if they just had them all as like a giant list and you could pick from any of them.
Yeah, that is also, so I'll jump in with another game. Dungeon World has something very similar to these, and they're called Bonds. They're almost exactly the same as the connections.
Yeah, Masks does it. A lot of PTBTAs do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the thing with Masks is there are, I think, usually 3 to 5 for each class, and they're fairly class specific. But then also elsewhere in the book where it's discussing alignments, because it's very much based on 70s D&D, so it still has good, evil, etc. It's like a list of like 15 to 20 generic bond questions per alignment. And maybe that's the kind of thing I would definitely like to see in Daggerheart, because some of these are fairly leading. And if you want to be the rogue, you'll be like, well, I didn't get exiled from my community, but I want to use this other background question that I think is cool for my character. So that's definitely the kind of feedback that's important to have for a playtest. So
yep.
Don't forget to submit that later.
One thing about these questions and why they seem so static is I think most of us are using Demiplane as a character creator.
Yeah.
And Demiplane has these three questions like nailed down in your background section, but it doesn't have a place to enter alternate questions. It doesn't have a place to like, so it feels like this is something nailed down, even though the playtest rules say, make up your own questions. If these don't work for you, try something else. So,
and it actually even says right below the hard coded questions, feel free to make up your own questions.
It's and it might just be a Demiplane thing rather than a Daggerheart thing.
Yeah.
Which, as like we said at the top of the show, this is a beta, both in terms of the rules from Darrington Press and also the character builder on Demiplane. So I'm sure these things will improve as they go along. I know the Pathfinder Nexus on Demiplane has improved by leaps and bounds since we started playing it. So.
I haven't read through all of it. Is there a, of the available material we have now, any sort of thing like where we bring the past connections to the like narrative front. Like, so like, let's say for between Ao and Arvid, for some reason that information does get out and it like creates like friction narratively.
Oh,
right.
No.
Or like if that would affect future roles or anything. It just popped into my head as we're talking about this. I think it's because since it is such a narrative focused game, I don't know if that's something that they're working on or if these are just mainly meant to be only for background.
Yeah, I think these are largely for background, but I could easily see winging it with something like advantage or disadvantage if it was relevant in that kind of case. But yeah, that's a lot of this section of the character creation is just kind of background to build on. So you're not coming in with a completely blank slate character. Let me see where that is at in character creation section of the book. Okay, finding it is fun here. Playing it. Well, because the book it has a character creation section, but it's in a completely different order than the actual character creator. Let's see. Character creation. Section 9, create your connections. Now it's time to forge your connections. These represent the relationships of personal history between you and the rest of your party members. I think I said that part.
You did.
Yeah, there we go. While it's great to create connections with every player, it's perfectly okay if you're not sure about some of them yet. You can always discover your relationships through play. Connections are just a starting block to build on during games. So I guess in this example, like, by filling out that connection with you and Arvid, you've at least set the ground to maybe cause that tension to be something that appears later in the story, whereas without that, like, you might not necessarily have thought right off the bat, hey, maybe Arvid knows something secret about me. Maybe our characters have some tension going on now. Maybe the secret comes out. And yeah, that can have an impact on the narrative, but it doesn't necessarily have... There's not really a rules impact to connections, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I was reading through it. I got that impression too.
Yep, same for background. Backgrounds are the backgrounds and the connections are mostly just things for me to hang plot on.
Are we good now?
I think so. I feel like we've talked about the game we want to play. I feel like everybody's got at least most of their character straightened out that they want to play in our one shot. Does anybody have any other questions about Daggerheart or about their character or about anything else right now?
Not at the moment.
No, they're good.
Good.
Yeah, I figure the questions will come once we actually start playing the game, but we'll save that for another time.
Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.